welcome to another episode of Living an Ultra Life. My name is Mike, and this week we are joined by a dude that I met in 6 days in the Dome, a Canadian who had probably the number one support crew there. I was very jealous every time I passed his crew. They were the most entertaining crew in the whole building. It was amazing. But Eric Matheson is joining us, and Eric is a very stout ultra runner, I'm finding out. And so I'm really excited to hear more about it. So let's welcome in Mr. Eric Matheson. You ready to go for a run, Eric?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Good to be here.
Good. All right. So aftermath of 6 days in the Dome, are you back up to snuff yet?
Feeling better. I can walk pretty normally now. My energy is still a bit low. My brain fog is getting lower or getting better each day. So I'd say I haven't been running yet, but yeah, more or less I'm back at it.
Okay, cool. So tell us a little bit about yourself when you're not out crushing awesome, crazy races.
So I live in Toronto, Canada. I'm a philosophy professor at the University of Toronto, Scarborough. I work in bioethics. Prior to this position, I was a clinical ethicist in Alberta in Western Canada and also Houston, Texas. So that position is based in a hospital. And when there's an ethics issue that comes up, doctors and nurses and other staff get me involved and I help out with that. So I still do a bit of that kind of on the side right now, but that's mainly it. I've got a wife and a daughter, and we like going camping and hanging out.
Cool. So bioethics, what does that all entail?
Any ethics issue that comes up for healthcare, medical technology. So there are, you know, emerging technologies that are, you know, gene editing or any kind of like ventilators or like ways of kind of treating people or new things that could come around. AI is obviously another big one. And then stuff in healthcare. So if there's a disagreement between the doctor and what the patient wants, how do we resolve that? How do we deal with the kind of classic ethics issues? Assisted dying is legal in Canada now, and I think 11 or 12 U.S. states. So that raises ethics issues. Stuff around the ability of people to make their own decisions. Like, how do we know when somebody is able to make their own decisions? Do they have capacity, as we call it? And so I'm working on kind of the theory of that as a philosopher, but also the kind of practice of that in a healthcare setting, trying to navigate those issues as they come up in real life.
Wow, that sounds amazingly difficult.
Yeah, working through the pandemic, you know, that was a lesson in lots of different things. Yeah, I learned a lot.
I can only imagine. So now for your running and stuff, have you always been a runner?
Yeah, more or less. Didn't run track in high school. I got like immediately into longer stuff. My first job when I was in, oh man, I was 14 or so, I was at a running store in Calgary, Alberta. And my boss, my first ever manager that year, was running the Canadian Death Race, which is in,
my gosh,
yeah, it was 125K. And I just like, I had like, did not know that was possible. And so every shift he would come in, he was like wearing his like running backpack and, you know, was like getting ready for it. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. And so I ran a bunch of half marathons in junior high and high school, and then ran my first 50K when I was, I don't know, 20 or 21 or so. And then took a break. When I moved to Toronto, I really wanted to do something, you know, with a varsity team. So I had done cross-country skiing when I was younger, but I joined the cross-country ski team at the University of Toronto and was pretty serious about that for a few years, and ended up coaching the team during my PhD, and then kind of navigated back into ultra running. I mean, mostly just like Toronto is not a great place for cross-country skiing, but it's really not a great place for like mountain ultra training. So doing kind of shorter, faster stuff was easier.
Okay. So now, is there a big ultra running scene in Canada?
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, since I, like, you know, when I was in middle school, that was, I graduated high school in 2005, which was like just as kind of the first, like that wave of, you know, Tony Krupicka and Kilian Jornet and all those guys were getting big. Yeah, I mean, there's just been an explosion of races in Alberta and BC, you know, so many ultras now, trail stuff everywhere. So it's a great scene in Toronto itself. I mean, there are heaps of runners and, you know, great runners, and there are some ultras around here. But, you know, there's just like access to kind of trails and proper hills is harder.
Okay. So like, what's the biggest distance you did before the 6 days in the dome.
I have a fastest known time on, it's called the Rideau Trail. It goes from Ottawa to Kingston, Ontario. It's almost, I think it's like 201 miles, and it's a mix of proper trail, single track, and kind of rural country roads connecting it. So I ran that in 2021 and did that supported with my great crew. And I think it took me 64 hours. Yeah, so that was the longest one I had done before 6 days.
But if I remember reading about that right, the FKT on the Rideau Trail had been like 38 years without being broken. Is that right?
Yeah, which was
And
part of the interest for me was to, I mean, the pandemic, like, races just weren't happening. And that FKT, I was living in Kingston at the time, so I kind of trained on parts of the trail, and I started to believe that the FKT was possible. That the trail is just totally different from what it was in the 80s. And of course, like, things like navigation and lighting and all that stuff is so much better now. So I thought I'd have a shot at it. And yeah, it went pretty well.
that's awesome, because you broke it by almost 20 hours, didn't you?
Yeah, I think the previous record was like 82 hours and I did 64.
That's awesome. That's amazing. So have you done anything like big in that 200 mile? Have you done like 100 milers and stuff like that?
Yeah, I did 100 miler Sinister 7 in Alberta, which is a very verti race in the Rockies. And I did do the Canadian Death Race as well, which is 125K. So I've never really stuck to one distance. I keep kind of
Right.
My wife worries that, I keep going up and up. And so after 6 days, what else will I get myself into? But yeah, so I've done, a handful of 50Ks and 50 milers as well.
That's amazing. So, yeah, and most people don't realize, but those Canadian races, like Canadian Death Race and the Sinister Seven, those are beefy races with a lot of elevation change, isn't it?
Yeah, Sinister 7 especially is really tough. There's so much climbing and it's usually pretty hot. It's usually and there's some long stretches that are pretty exposed. But it's a blast. I mean, that area is just, one of the most beautiful parts of the Rockies. There's just so much
Yeah,
history.
all of Alberta is like my favorite part of Canada. So,
And that was, growing up in Calgary, like I just totally took all that for granted that I could go out to Canmore or Banff. Like in when I first started college, I was not a great student. So I would skip school and I'd go, backpacking by myself. And that's how I got into trail running too, just realizing I could cover a lot more ground, but really just like did not appreciate how good I had it there. And then coming out to Ontario, which I love for other reasons, but oh man, I miss the mountains.
I can imagine. Yeah. So you do a lot of street running, I imagine, in the Toronto area.
Yeah. So yeah, mostly there's a good pathway system here. I run to work for training. I leave clothes at my office and run back and forth to campus on teaching days. And so that helps. And then try to get out of the city every once in a while to do some longer stuff. But for 6 days in the dome, like there's a track nearby. So I was doing lots of laps on that. And trying to stay on pavement as much as I could to prepare for the surface.
So how did 6 days in the dome come about? I mean, did you just hear about this race and say, yeah, that sounds like fun. Let's do it.
I don't remember how I first found out about 6 days. I think I was looking through the Canadian Ultra records, and the Canadian 6 day record is still from 1891. So there have been some seriously good people like Dave Proctor and some other folks who have tried 6 day races and haven't been able to break that record. And it's I think 870 kilometers.
Oh my gosh.
Which in 1890, I mean, it's just mind blowing how good that record is, like at any time, especially from 1891. So one way or another, I found out about that, and then I think I came across Bob Hearn's blog and got really interested in his writing about it. And I think after doing like the Rideau Trail and other trail stuff, the idea of a track run, was interesting just as a totally different challenge. And to the logistics of it are still significant, but not nearly the same as like a crew trying to find me in the middle of the woods and like having to prepare all that stuff with maps and so on. So that's really the kind of as I learned more about the history, I became more interested in it.
Okay. So those who don't know, so 800 kilometers is almost 500 miles. So that's a beefy record, and it stood since the 1890s.
Yeah, 540 miles, I think, is the conversion. Yeah, since 1891. The guy's name was David Bennett. I actually it was set in New York City. I don't know if that was at one of the, when Madison Square Garden was hosting those, or
Right.
like what the history. I can't really find anything more about like that record or the guy, David Bennett. But yeah, I mean, it's just and now having done the 6-day race, like I just have even more appreciation for just how amazing that is.
That is, yeah, that's an incredible record. I'm like mind blown, 540 miles, but yeah, you came close.
Yeah, that was the kind of on paper the last couple of years that was, thinking about longer term, that if I could ever get close to that record, and so that is still the goal at some point, but we'll have to figure out another chance.
Okay. So I mentioned in the promo that, your crew was amazing. Where did your crew come from?
They are totally amazing. So one part of it is my sister Kayla, who lives in Calgary and is a runner herself. She ran her first marathon last year and is just the most, like, in terms of logistics and stuff, she is just brilliant at that, and is also supportive enough to come down from Calgary for a week and to help out. Another part of it was my friend Marco Wainman, who I know from the cross-country ski team at the U of T, but we've been friends for a long time. He's a like 240 something marathoner,
Wow.
and really strong runner, and was also willing to come down to help me out. And then there was kind of a hodgepodge of other folks. My friend Adam, who lives in Madison, and he actually was a pacer for me at the Rideau Trail. And I also had a friend Steve come down from Toronto just to hang out. I ran Sinister Seven with him, 100 miler. So all of them are runners themselves, and I think wanted to kind of take part and see the spectacle. But yeah, I mean, like you said, it was just I felt kind of bad having so many people helping me out, and it was just great. I'm so glad that they were all able to come out and help.
Yeah, well, tell them thank you, because they weren't just a crew. They were like entertainment value. I mean, the whiteboard with the questions, and everybody would go by going, "Where the hell did that question come from?" And then you'd spend laps trying to figure out what the answer was. It was amazing, just amazing. And so your first day at 6 days in the Dome, you took off like a bat out of hell, and you had
Yep.
a how many miles did you do first day?
99.
99. I thought you were close to 100 miles. I thought you had run a 100 miler. I was sitting there trying to do the math. I was like, he had to been close. And now you were dealing with, was it some foot problems like blisters and that type of stuff, or what was going on?
No, so I've had iron issues for a long time, but I was actually to back up a little bit, I was gonna run 6 days in the Dome last year, and I had this just beautiful training block for like 5 months. If you look at my Strava, it's just like, I never like had a down week. I'm just this glorious progression up to like 90 or 95 miles a week,
Wow.
and I just and the whole time I was just like, oh my goodness, like I might never get this again. Like, this is just like, couldn't believe how good training was going. And then I ended up, I like took this job, and we ended up moving from Kingston, Ontario to Toronto. And so a bunch of stuff transpired and the race didn't happen. Like, took a month or so off and then got back to training. But from like, I don't know, December until April, I was having problems, and I thought my iron was kind of sorted out. But in April, I had it checked, and my ferritin was 3, and the normal range is like 15 to 300.
And you were 3?
Yeah, mine was 3.
Isn't
So
that like dangerously low?
extremely low.
Yeah.
The doctor was very surprised that I was running at all. So that explained why, things just were not going that well. I would do like a 70 or 80 mile week, and it would go okay, and then I would just like feel terrible for like a week or two. So after that, I was like, okay. So I started taking a lot more iron supplements. I'm normally vegetarian. I started eating meat again. So it was like just doing whatever I could to kind of get it back up. And then had my iron checked again in right at the start of June. After all of that, after taking all those supplements, like doing everything, and it had only gone up to like 4.
Oh
So
my gosh.
there's clearly something going on that I'm still, kind of getting checked out. But I got an iron infusion the week before the race, and they said you know, it'd take a week or so to kind of start kicking in. And even like the morning of the race, like once I woke up, I was like, I still just don't feel great, you know, just kind of low energy. And like, you know, I get kind of lightheaded and stuff, but I was like, I will just give it a shot. Like, you know, we came this way. Let's just see how it goes. And then once I started, I actually felt pretty good for the first, like I had a, like my goal was 3 minute laps for the first day. And so for the first like 12 hours, I think I was like basically sticking to that. And I was just like so happy actually to like, it was finally there, you know, like talking to people, like seeing everything. I just kind of got caught up in the spirit of it. And then normally I'm fine to like sleep deprivation is normally not that big of a thing for me. Like at the Rideau Trail, I only slept like an hour over the 64 hours and had a pretty rough second night that run, but like the first night went fine. I ran straight through. And so I slept for an hour on the first night of 6 days. And then after I woke up from that though, I just felt totally zonked. Like I would try to run and I would get lightheaded and it's just like, yeah, feeling dizzy, which is like normally what I experience with low iron. So yeah, after like I was, my original plan was to do 185K for the first day, which is like 114, 115 miles.
Okay.
So like, you know, put in a really big first day and then see how it went. Yeah. Just like once I woke up from that hour long sleep, I was like, just not doing good. So I ended up walking basically all of like the rest of that morning and then all of day two.
Wow. Well, I knew that your pace had really fallen off and I thought it was speed problems. I didn't realize it was an iron deficiency, a way big iron deficiency. Wow. That's amazing. So how many miles, kilometers did you get on day two?
Not that many. I think I did like 50K or so, which is like, what is that? 30 something.
Yeah. Miles. Around 30. Yeah. That's amazing. Wow.
Yeah. So the second night we just decided, that's when I started to kind of, you know, joking that it was made into a fun run, like went back to the hotel, had a full night's sleep, like any chance of the record or anything else was gone at that point. And I still wanted to do the whole time and get through and still kind of give it a good effort. But it was so touch and go with any running was really like, it would just floor me. So I was walking a lot. And yeah, I think the next 3 days I was like doing, I think 50 to 60K a day. So I was still wow. like on the track for 15 hours or so, but mostly walking.
Okay. That's amazing. So then the start of the last day, because you picked a little bit of volume back up the last day, didn't you?
Yeah, things got better. You know, that's the thing about a 6 day race that I've heard people talk about. You know, you can kind of like recover a bit or you can kind of learn from it. And so I get like day one went really well. And then days two, three, and four, like I just the whole time I was just like, should I keep going? Like, is this worth it? I was like just really not having a great time. And then kind of around, I guess like the latter part of day four, but like definitely day five, I was able to start running a bit more and so did pick it up and was, you know, like just, I was really happy. Like all of a sudden, yeah, I think my day five, I think I ran 80K, is like 50 miles. Yep. And then last day I ran 90K. So a little
that's
bit more.
Awesome.
So
yeah, yeah. And last day you were even running with Megan a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah. All of a sudden. So I only slept, I think I slept 2 or 3 hours on the last night. And yeah, with you know, running some laps with Megan, running some laps with David, who's also done, I think he's got the fourth or fifth best North American distance. Yep. For 6 days. The last night, I mean, I was really having fun hanging out with people. It's like the first day, you know, everyone was kind of running their own pace. And so didn't really get to chat to people that much. But, you know, the last couple of days, like walking and running with people and getting to talk to them and hear their stories. And it was a blast and like time went way faster. And yeah. And then I was able to start running more. So I feel like, although it didn't really go anything like what I was planning or hoping for this round, but it did, I still really enjoyed the experience and learned a lot.
Yeah. And you picked up a lot of miles on that last day because I was sitting there, I was starting to get concerned you were actually going to pass me.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, I mean, most of the after day one, you know, extrapolating on day two and three. I was like, maybe I'll get 400, 450K, something like that. And then, the last 2 days went really well. And so I finished with 507K, I think, which I wasn't expecting earlier on. So I was happy to get that.
Yeah, that was amazing. I didn't even know that 500K was a thing until Chip Blanton. I had gone over 300 miles and he was like, so what's your plan now? And I was like, well, I'm just going to, have fun. I said, I'm over 300. He's like, well, you can't slow down. And I was like, why? And he said, you got to go for 500K. And I'm like, I don't even know what 500K is. that was funny.
There are more of them, like you fit more into the mile. So yeah,
that's exactly what he said. He said, look, stop looking at the miles. Look at the K. Yeah. And I was like, okay, and you're going to make me do math. And on the sixth day, that's not going to work very good. So that was fun. It was just fun. Everybody was really, really fun. And I had a blast with everybody there. And you providing a little bit of competition kind of got me going. And I think, was it day five when you came in to the gym and you said you were going to catch me?
Yeah. That was, teasing you there, but I'm glad it gave you some motivation.
Yeah, it did. It was like, okay, I can't let this guy catch me. I've passed him. I worked my butt off to pass him. So that was awesome. So will you do it again?
Yeah, at some point. Obviously, I got to sort this health stuff out and put in a good block. I'm intrigued by some of the other by across the years and some of the other 6 day ones. So I'm not sure which one I'll do, but I definitely want to give it another shot and have a good block and then kind of go in with a bit more energy.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to give it another shot. My wife has banned me from doing 2025. Okay. So yeah, 2025 is out because, she said, is there any chance that we could for once take a vacation that does not include a race?
Uh-huh.
We're going to do a vacation that does not include a race.
Yeah, that's good. I find I'm so impressed by, there are people who do like multiple 6 day races a year. And I feel like for family and work stuff and other things, like every 2 years, I can do like a big kind of project like this.
It takes a lot to train for it.
It does. Yeah. And fitting it in, like I've got a 4-year-old daughter and luckily with my work, it's pretty flexible for, I teach on certain days, but the rest of the time I can kind of fit it in. But as when you're training that much, you're not like your mind starts to get a little bit less sharp. So
yes.
Doing philosophy and, clinical work, I wanted to make sure that I'm still able to kind of think my best. So it is nice to just take a break and to have more time in the day. Now I have to figure out when do I shower during the day? There's no natural point to do it. So I got to figure that stuff out, but everything else, I'm enjoying the time off.
There you go. So now during 6 days, what did you find were the things that worked and what were the things that didn't work?
I was pretty happy with my feet, held up pretty well. My friend Marku was great for foot care stuff. I had a bunch of chafing problems all over the place at the Rito Trail. And so my goal was to deal with those. And I did. My stomach was really good. I was doing so much walking that I think that helped. So I think that those were that I was happy with. I was pretty bummed out after the first, even before day one ended, I just knew that it was not gonna, it was just not going well. And so it took me a little bit of time to kind of adjust from that and to kind of refocus and figure out what I wanted out of it. The main stuff, I think the thing that did not go well at all was I just couldn't handle the lack of sleep. Which is normally something I'm pretty good at. So I don't think there's too much I could have done differently about. I think I just would have gone in the red zone too much and would have had to pull the plug. The other things just about that particular race, I did not train enough for the surface. It's so hard. Within a couple hours, I was like, oh man, my legs are so beat up. I feel like I did a 50K. So that was the thing that going back there, I would just do more pavement running, try to prepare for that. The music there, I found that's something I had to kind of adjust to. Just it was always always playing and repeating songs and stuff, so just kind of that mental part of it. But I don't think there's not huge stuff I want to do differently for strategy or anything. It's mostly the really big picture stuff about the build into it, and then just getting the iron sorted.
I hope the iron gets sorted out, because I really think that you could go for that Canadian record. You're talented enough.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it would be fun to kind of give it a really good shot.
What are the things that you do to train yourself mentally to do these tough things like this and the Redoubt Trail and that?
I guess there are two parts. I think there's stuff that I've worked on a lot of, like kind of problem solving and just thinking about like issues as they come up and not catastrophizing. So that was the thing at the Rideau Trail. I was having this calf issue kind of halfway through, and for a while I was like, oh man, this is like it's over, like I'm just totally, like, it was all swollen, it didn't look very good, and like, it's over, I'm like gonna hang it up. And then I was kind of feeling bad about myself for like 20 minutes or so, and I was like, wait, I haven't done like anything to try to address this. I haven't taken like Advil or like used like a, a wrap or like compression or like anything. I should just try something.
Right.
And so I took an Advil, and the swelling went down like immediately and was solved. Like I only had to take like, I think I took like two more Advils the rest of the race, so like, what, not a big deal. I was like, oh man, like I was like so in my head that this is a disaster. And so at 6 days, I was really trying to just like be ready for that and like thinking about those things. And so I did quite a bit of visualization just, when I was getting ready to fall asleep, or even during like during runs, of just thinking about stuff that could happen and then just kind of like walking through the steps of what I wanted to like problem solve. But then the other thing is I really just try to work on, kind of off and on, I've done like different mindfulness stuff, but it is just kind of a like a presence, or just, not trying to think about how much time is left or how much distance is left, and just trying to be like, what can I do right now, or what, kind of watching my thoughts. I think I've got better at that. It's hard to kind of pinpoint exactly what the like what the skill is, but I do think it's something that has helped me more.
I like that a lot. That's a good tip. If anybody's listening to this podcast, you might want to take note on those two tips from Eric, because that'll help your ultra marathons go a lot better. So what's next on Eric's slate besides figuring out this iron issue and solving that?
Yeah, I'm basically, so I've been referred to a hematologist, so I've got a little bit more digging to figure out. The infusion did work, so my ferritin has gone up to kind of normal levels, but my hemoglobin, the kind of other part, is still not doing that well, and it's been about a month. So yeah, anyway, I mean, there's still stuff to sort out with that. I will probably drop down. I've never actually raced a marathon, so it'd be fun to do that at some point, probably not this fall, but maybe for next spring. I did the Birkebeiner in Wisconsin last year. It's the biggest cross-country ski race in North
Oh,
America.
cool.
But last year the snow wasn't very good. It's usually a point-to-point race, but they had to switch it into a loop. So hopefully we'll go back and do the proper one. And yeah, I've got a bunch of like writing and other stuff to do. So I've been really enjoying kind of just having the days to think about that stuff without having to like try to fit in runs. And then we'll see, maybe something next year, maybe yeah. First, take some time off.
Yep. That's, hey, sometimes your body is trying to send signals that it might not be a bad idea to take time off.
Yeah, and there's so many other, just kind of like I did the Presidential Traverse in New Hampshire last year with some friends, actually including Mark, who was there, and Steve. And that was a blast. It was just like a fun day to go out and do that. Took us like 12 hours, but I've been to the Grand Canyon, but like rim to rim to rim would be great. I've never been to
Right.
Colorado, which is like, such a great running place. So maybe just finding some more of those, not races, but another one in BC, close to the Alberta border, is the Rockwall Traverse, which is like I think it's like 55 kilometers. People usually do it as a 3 to 4 day hike, but it's just the most beautiful trail. You can do it
Wow.
one day as like a 10 to 12 hour run. I think I did it 3 years in a row, missed it last year. So getting out there, those are the things I find that just fill my cup and that make me sure, like, just moving through the mountains like that is just, I find that nothing beats it. So, yeah. So I'll find some other thing, and then, yeah, kind of keep my powder dry and get ready for another 6 day at some point.
There you go. That's awesome. I love it. Isn't there like a big trail outside of Banff, someplace that goes up and up the ski mountain?
A big trail outside of Banff. Yes, there is, but now I'm.
I remember reading about it, but yeah, I could probably Google it and find it. But That would be beautiful just because I love that whole Banff area. That's just, I think that's some of the most beautiful country in all the world. So
I
it's.
agree. Yeah. And there's so many just great like full day outings, like either point to point or loops. And my friend Adam and I, who's at the race crewing for me, we spent a week in Banff the summer that I did the Rideau Trail as a kind of a training camp. And we did rock wall and we did just a bunch of other, like every day we would do one or two kind of trail runs. And yeah, I totally agree. It's just an amazing part of the world, and yeah, you can't beat it really.
Exactly. That's amazing. I know that your time's valuable. So let's bring this kind of to a wrap. The name of the podcast is Living an Ultralife. When you hear Living an Ultralife, what's the first thing that pops into your head?
I think that it's thinking long term. I think that the thing that ultra like it's like writing a book or something that you have to you can't like hold the whole beast in your head at one time, like thinking about running for 6 days, like you can't just like kind of like capture that. And so I think that so much of life, any kind of bigger project or dream or goal that you have, the way to do that is to break it down. And I think that what ultra running has taught me is that you can do amazing things kind of bit by bit. So it is just about the process of like figuring out what you need to do kind of on a daily basis. And that kind of takes care of so much of it. And then really going for it. I mean, I think that the kind of ultra life thing is just like also finding big goals. Like, we can surprise ourselves. Like we're capable of lots more than we often think. And so I think ultras are a great way of proving that.
Absolutely. Love that answer, Eric. Thank you so much for spending a little bit of time with us.
Hey, Mike, this is great. Thank you for inviting me.
Thanks for listening. Really appreciate you guys. We'll see you next time on Living an Ultralife.